Thanks. So I'll be talking about a problem that's simpler than most that we ought to be entertaining in this fluid particle program, and that I'm going to be dealing with dry collisional mixtures, binary mixtures of spheres, not only of two sizes, but also of two materials. So the spheres of the mixture can have the same size, but they can have different masses because they're made of different materials. First question, why do we engage in this activity? And there are at least three reasons. One is that the fact that we have two different kinds of particles in the flow affects the way the flow of the mixture behaves. So it would be interesting to be able to quantify the influence of particle sizes on the flow. Also, the process of segregation is of interest. It's of interest to geologists because deposits often exhibit size segregation, for example. And if one understood segregation better, one could perhaps recreate the processes that led to the deposits. And a third reason is a negative reason. In many industrial processes, segregation is undesirable. People who make pharmaceuticals out of grains of different sizes often want those grains to be well mixed. And they do what they can to avoid particle segregation. And once again, we can understand how to avoid particle segregation if we understand the process of segregation itself. So how do we do this? Well, I'm going to put together two theories that don't have any business really being put together. One is a theory for segregation of spheres that differ by little in size and mass. And this is a theory that was, in a sense, inherited from classical work in the kinetic theory of dense gases done by Dutch researchers. And it was meant to describe typical molecular gases, and we borrow it and apply it to situations in which the particles dissipate energy in collisions. So that's an abuse of the theory. And that seems to work pretty well for situations in which there's not too much energy dissipated in a collision. But now I'm going to apply it to very dissipative collisions. Okay, so I'm certainly taking this theory and using it out of the range of its definition of its derivation. And I should say something, and the way the theory would fail when you have very dissipative collisions is an assumption upon which the derivation is based, that the kinetic energy of the velocity fluctuations of the two species is the same, is known to fail. So this assumption is called the assumption of equipartition of energy. But it's not clear that that assumption has a great influence on the process of segregation. Okay, and then I'm going to use this theory for segregation together with what I call an extended kinetic theory for a dense collisional flow. So I'm going to imagine that this segregation is taking place, and then I'm going to describe the mixture as if it were a single particle, with a sphere that consisted that had the average radius of the two species that comprised the mixture, and that had the average mass of the two species that comprised the mixture, and for the rheology of this mixture, I'm going to be using the modifications that the segregation theory says ought to be made to the transport coefficients. So that's going to give me the influence of segregation on the behavior of the mixture. Okay, so I'm just kludging two theories together. But, I mean, after all, the theories embody balance of momentum, balance of energy. What's going wrong is this assumption of equipartition of energy, and also details about the velocity distributions. okay? But you'd expect that some of the backbone of the theory is going to survive this abuse. Okay, the ingredients, well, I'm going to make the assumption of a steady uniform flow. I'm going to look at the simplest possible situation. So the only variations that are going to be taken, so it's an inclined flow, the only variations are going to be those across the flow, and I'm going to be attempting to predict profiles of concentration for the two species, and of course the total concentration through the flow, the velocity profile of the mixture, and well, I guess that's it. I mean, I can predict this, the kinetic energy of the mixture if I choose to, but I don't think I have any graphs to show you about that. So I'm looking at the simplest possible flow to be sure, and I say I'm borrowing, or the theory that we're using is based upon earlier kinetic theories done by groups in New York and Leiden. These theories are they're tremendously complicated. That is, they're done precisely, but the resulting formulas for the transport coefficients, for example, are almost overwhelming in their complexity. So that what Arneson and I did is that we simplified this theory to apply to binary mixtures whose diameters, whose size didn't differ by so much, and whose masses didn't differ by so much. And that gave you'll see that the formulas are still rather complicated, but they're far more manageable than the general case. I mean, the idea is that if this gives encouraging results, we can always return back to the originator of the theory and perhaps improve upon it. And then this notion of extended kinetic theory. So it's well known that in these very dense flows, very dense, very dissipated flows, the classical kinetic theory doesn't apply. Something's happening that is causing the failure of the classical kinetic theory. And what's happening is that the assumption of molecular chaos is breaking down. That is, the assumption of molecular chaos, in part, is that the particles are interacting through instantaneous binary collisions. And that's not the case. If the particles have some compliance in these dense flows, multiple particles are interacting at a time. They're particle clustering. If you do a simulation using hard particles, neighboring particles are undergoing repeated chattering collisions. So and these are certainly correlated, and that's another way that the assumption of molecular chaos breaks down. So this kinetic theory involves a simple extension in which one length scale, the length scale that is involved in the rate of collisional dissipation, is replaced by a length identified with the length of a particle chain or the size of a particle cluster. And then a simple phenomenological rule is introduced in order to establish what that length is. Okay, so that's, in that sense, the kinetic theory is extended. And the kinetic theory that we extend is, and now this is for the mixture, the kinetic theory that we use for the mixture is a kinetic theory for very dissipative collisions due to Garzo and Dufty. So we, for the mixture, we work these two theories together and take the limit of the relations, the transport equations in the Garzo-Dufty theory that's appropriate when the solid volume fraction is rather high. So we're going to be dealing with concentrations, mixture solid volume fractions, somewhere between 50 and somewhat less than 60%. So we're very dense. Okay, so those are the ingredients. And now I guess I'm going to have to... Oh, and so what's the point? So the point is we have data that we can shoot at. That is, we've got data from numerical simulations of Tripathi and Kakkar, who looked at binary mixtures of colliding grains on an inclined bed to which particles similar to the small spheres of the flow had been rigidly attached. So we have an inclined flow of a binary mixture of spheres moving over a bumpy boundary. And as you see in this snapshot, such a flow, once it has achieved a steady uniform state, exhibits segregation of particles, in this instance, by size. And Tripathi and Kakkar measure the concentration profiles of the two species. They measure the average velocity, measure the concentration of the mixture, we have access to their data, and that's what we're going to be comparing the predictions against. Okay, so, and I should say, let's see. So this is their simulations are done in a periodic cell, so a periodic front to back and side to side. This is a free surface on top. I say we've got a rigid bumpy base at the bottom. Their particles had a coefficient of restitution of 0.88, had a coefficient of sliding friction of 0.5, and we use those quantities to calculate an effective coefficient of restitution for a theory for frictionless grains. Now, that seems maybe a little mysterious, but the idea is that if we take friction seriously, then we're going to have to include an equation to determine the average angular velocity of a particle in the flow. And we're going to have to incorporate an equation to deal with the evolution of the energy and the rotational velocity fluctuations. We have a tremendously complicated theory. So the way we get around that is that we imagine that the rotational kinetic energy and the translational kinetic energy are related to one another as they are in a uniform, steady shearing flow. And then we use that relationship, which we can determine, in fact, analytically, we use that relationship to construct an effective coefficient of restitution in the equation for the translational energy. Okay, so we take into account the friction in terms of its influence on the dissipation of the translational energy fluctuations. And then we ignore it every place else. We don't take into account the influence of friction on the exchange of momentum, for example. Although the kinetic energy of the velocity fluctuations does appear in the coefficients that govern the exchange of momentum. So it's taken into account in an indirect way once we take into account its influence on the translational kinetic energy. Okay, so the point is, we, given their input for the normal and tangential coefficients in a collision, we can calculate an effective coefficient of restitution, and that's what we'll be using in making any comparisons. Okay, so let me just introduce the variables. So we have particles of two different radii. The diameter is the sum of those. And here's the small parameter that we'll be focusing our attention on. That's one small parameter. We have similar situations for the masses of the two spheres of the mixture. And here's the small parameter that we're going to be dealing with respect to the masses. And these have different forms just because of the way that they appear in the original kinetic theory. These are convenient measures of small quantities when you're linearizing the original kinetic theory. And we have other quantities that describe how many of each species are there. So these are numbers per unit volume of species A and species B. This is number density of the mixture. I'll come to this kind of moment. We have corresponding mass densities for each species. We got a mass density of the mixture. We have volume fractions that I'll refer to sometimes as concentrations that are derived from the geometry of the spheres and the numbers per unit volume. And these are for each species. And we've got a concentration of the mixture, which is the sum of those. Okay. So this is important to us. So this is the This is the total number fraction of spheres of species A. Let's say the big ones, if you like, or the heavy ones. So this is the reason that this is important, is that these total numbers of particles are part of the data that Tripathi and Kakkar provide to us. Okay, so that's going to be one of the inputs in the theory as we try to predict what they see. Okay, so here we have other variables. The mixture velocity is a mass-weighted average of the velocities of the two species. Each species has a granular temperature, which is really the kinetic energy of the velocity fluctuations of those. And we can construct a mixture temperature based on those. And I say the fundamental assumption in these kinetic theories is that the two granular temperatures are equal. Okay, and as soon as you start dealing with rather dissipative interaction, that's the assumption that first breaks down. Okay, so now let me talk about segregation. You know, so the question is, well, why do particles segregate? How do we understand that? So the idea is we'll write down a momentum. So I'm just talking about the balance of forces, if you like, across the flow. Okay, so there's a particle pressure. And there's a gradient of particle pressure that serves to balance gravity, at least in part. And then there's another contribution to the balance of momentum across the flow to species A, and that's its interaction through collisions with the particles of species B. So there's a momentum exchange that's between the two species. And similarly, for spheres of species B, we've got gravity and the opposite rate of exchange of collisional momentum. Okay, so there's no mysteries there. I mean, the mysteries would be then, well, what's the form of this? How does this depend upon quantities having to do with the geometry and mass of the spheres and maybe the strength of the velocity fluctuations? And similarly, this guy, and I'll say more about that in just a moment. And then if we sum these two momentum balances, then we get the force balance, the momentum balance for the mixture perpendicular to the flow, where the pressure, the mixture pressure, is the sum of these two partial pressures, and the mixture mass density is the sum of the two mass densities of the species. Okay, so that's fine. So that's the hydrostatic balance for the mixture. And now, let's talk about segregation. Segregation then is described by taking the weighted difference of these two momentum balances. So segregation is a phenomenon that takes place simply because we're trying to balance momentum, and we have two species, each of which is contributing momentum and interacting with one another. So segregation is going to be described by this equation. So we have to say something about the partial pressures, and we have to say something about this collisional interaction between particles of the two species. Okay, so here's what the partial pressures look like, and now the theory is getting complicated. So the partial pressures have a dilute contribution, which is not going to concern us in this talk, but you have a dilute contribution that you're accustomed to, perhaps the number density times the temperature, and then it has dense contributions that involve the geometry of the particles in the way that they interact with themselves, that is, between the particles of the same species, and the way that they interact with the spheres of the other species. And these guys are rather complicated because they involve the radial distribution function for colliding particles. And of course, there are three of these, one for collisions between particles A and particles A, one between B and B, and the other between A and B. Okay, and they're typically functions of geometry, that is the particle radii and the particle concentrations. And these functions are so complicated that I'm not going to bother writing them down. And this is one of the reasons, then, that we want to develop a theory for situations in which these radii don't differ by very much, because the expressions for these radial distribution functions simplify significantly. Okay? So that's the story there. And of course, that if we're going to do expansions, we're going to get simplifications here as well. Okay, and finally, I want to give you an example. I want to give you an example of this collisional interaction. So this collisional interaction between particles A and B, or B and A equivalently, involved this factor, which is a dense correction to the pressure. And in this simplest case, and I've got to emphasize that this is the simplest case we can imagine for this kind of an interaction, we see that here are coefficients that are sensitive to the difference in masses of the two species, and there's a derivative of the log of the temperature, so that there's a contribution to the collisional interaction due to the fact that there may be gradients of the kinetic energy around, and also there are contributions due to the fact that there are gradients of the number densities around. Now this is an example of this collisional interaction based upon a Gaussian velocity distribution. So it's simple. I mean, the ones that we're inheriting from the more complicated kinetic theory are far more complicated, okay? And I won't show you them, but next I'm going to show you the form of the, let's see, let me go back. Next, I'm going to show you the form of the equation, or the equation analogous to this equation, when we adopt that more complicated structure of the kinetic theory and linearize for small radii differences and small mass differences. So I'm making a big jump here. But I hope I've given you an impression of kind of where all this comes from. I mean, the bottom line is there's nothing mysterious about segregation. It comes from a consideration of momentum and momentum exchange between species of particles. And that momentum exchange is sensitive not only to the concentrations, but is also sensitive to gradients in their kinetic energy. Okay? So we can't just focus on the momentum of the particles. We have to be sensitive to taking into account measures of the energy. Okay, so now here's the theory. Here's the balance, here's the weighted difference of the momentum balance when we have small differences in momentum and energy. Let's see. And so this term here is the term that was analogous to the derivative of the log of the ratio of Na over Nb in the previous slide. And it's this measure of the difference in the number densities of the two species. And if we know what this is, and if we know, for example, what the sum of their number densities are at points in the flow, then we can say how the particles have segregated. Okay? So that this is the equation that is going to be governing segregation. And here again, the segregation is sensitive to the derivatives, to the inhomogeneities in the direction normal to the flow of the kinetic energy of the mixture. And it has coefficients here that I'll show you in a moment. And it's also sensitive to gravity. So gravity is appearing explicitly here. And we're also dealing with coefficients. And here, the linearization in the masses and the radii made explicit. Okay, so this is the form of this weighted difference of the momentum balances that applies when the radii or the masses don't differ by much. Okay, and now we have to close the equation, and it's a little bit awkward to close because this is the information we're given. This is the information we're given, for example, in the Tripathi-Kakar simulations, but the problem is that the average of this is not the average of the ratio is not the ratio of the averages. So in order to deal with integration of this equation with sufficient accuracy, we've got to introduce a subsidiary variable, and then we can create a differential equation for that variable and use this as a boundary condition, use this information we have. So this, if you like, just that's a technical detail that allows us to treat the information we're given by Tripathi and Kakkar in an appropriate way when solving this equation. Okay, so now I want to show you what these coefficients look like. R1, gamma 1, R2, gamma 2. And, you know, they're complicated, but they're nothing near, there's nowhere near as complicated as the more primitive were before the linearization was made. And the good news is that these coefficients don't depend individually on the concentrations of the species. They all depend upon the concentration of the mixture. Okay, so that's a tremendous simplification. Okay, so they're complicated, but there's not much latitude here. That is, if we predict the concentration of the mixture, then we know what these coefficients are. And let's see. So there's this function g that we'll see again and again, and that's the concentration of the mixture times the radial distribution function for the mixture, and we take for the mixture a form of the radial distribution function that was put forward by Torquato for dense systems. For less dense systems, in the classical kinetic theory, we use something that was determined in a numerical simulation by Carnahan and Starling. Here we use Torquato's, and in these very dense, very dissipated systems, is an indication that this radial distribution function becomes singular at a value of the concentration other than dense random packing. So if this dense random packing would say this singularity of this radial distribution function occurs at 0.64, that's the volume fraction of dense random packing. And here we're going to use this as a parameter in addressing the data of Tripathi and Kakkar. Okay, so there's one fudge factor, if you like. There's one free parameter that we're going to be making use of. And numerical simulations say that for coefficients of restitution, let's say between 0.6 and 0.7, this is on the order of 0.6. Okay, so that's the segregation theory. Okay, so now I'm going to talk about the dense mixture theory. So we have a mixture density, and remember the particle of our, I mean, this is really a fictive particle, this mixture particle, because it has the average radius and the average mass of the two species. And as a consequence, the mass density of the mixture involves a correction to the average, to the density of the fictive single constituent mixture. Mixture pressure, we have a constitutive equation for the mixture pressure that now we've only retained the densest part of the constitutive relation for the mixture pressure. G is appearing again, and in situations where, I'm sorry, these in dense flows, we see, or we, from numerical simulations and experiment, that the density through the flow is essentially constant, the mass density. So if we use that, we can integrate the balance of force normal to the flow quite easily. So we have a determination of the pressure, and we can use that determination of the pressure in order to determine the kinetic energy of the velocity fluctuations. Okay, so remember, the reason this is in red is this is one of the fields we need to drive segregation. So we know what that is. We know what that is explicitly once we have some information, let's say, about this function g. Little g is the acceleration of gravity, of course. Phi is the inclination of the bed. Okay, and then from Garzo and Dufty, we get an expression for the relationship between the mixture shear stress and the gradients and the velocity. And the contribution of Garzo and Dufty is to provide the information about how this constitutive relation, the transport coefficients, depend upon the coefficients of restitution. And for this coefficient of restitution, we'll be using this effective coefficient of restitution that I mentioned earlier. So that's shear stress. And finally, there's a rate of collisional dissipation that also appears in the theory. Now, notice that this constitutive relation is being modified by the presence of two species. So we're using the Arneson-Jenkins theory to modify the transport coefficients. And let's see. And here is this quantity L. So in the classical kinetic theory, this is simply the particle diameter. But here we're saying that there's another length that's playing a role in the problem, and it first enters the theory in the rate of collisional dissipation. And if I identify this length, let's say, as the length of a cluster or the length of a chain of particles that are in simultaneous contact, the way that we derive it or determine it is through this phenomenological law. It's got a coefficient, numerical coefficient here. It's got this g, which has to do with the distance between the edges of the particles to some power, and it's got the ratio of the derivative of u with respect to y and t to the 1/2. So the idea is this. This material is being sheared. And because it's being sheared, particles at 45 degrees to the shearing are being driven into one another. And these particles there, so there's a tendency there to form multiple contacts, to form chains. While at the same time, there are collisions still taking place in the flow. And these collisions have a tendency to disrupt the chains. So this additional length then is formed as a balance between the orienting influence of the shear and the randomizing influence of the collisions. Okay? That's the story, and I'm sticking to it. Yeah, so if we have a flow which has both a very dense region and a less dense region, yeah, the shift takes place when L is equal to the particle diameter. That's when you segue into the classical kinetic theory. Guarantee. It's pretty strong, eh? We're talking about granular materials here.
Typically, we know that shift should happen when the binary collision dominates. What I'm saying is that based on this argument, it was unclear to me when you shift, when L decays to D, that happens to be where binary collision.
Well, that's the assumption. I mean, who knows? You know, where the binary collisions take place. It would be nice if we could say, well, that shift always occurs at a certain value of the concentration. But that's not the case. So let me make a little digression here. So that a concentration of 49% for a mixture of identical spheres has the significance that at that concentration, there's a phase change that's first possible between random colliding states and ordered colliding states, okay? So there's kind of a feeling that even if you are free of the influence of gravity, which is forcing everything down, above that concentration, you'd expect to see some indication that a phase change is possible, okay? But L is typically going to 1 in the neighborhood of 50% or 49%. It depends on the flow. Yes?
So L is?
Oh, L is going to RA, to the diameter, I meant.
But
yeah.
That will vary across?
Yeah, L varies across the flow.
And this formula replacing RAB by R should also apply to monodisperse flows?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I'm treating this as an equivalent monodisperse flow, the flow of the mixture. Okay. It's the diameter. Yeah, it's just RAB is RA plus RB. Okay, so that's this is the new ingredient. This is the extension, for better or for worse. And it turns out this power 1/3 works against existing data, and this coefficient. If you take it to be 1/2, then once again, you do a pretty good job of fitting existing data, monodisperse. Okay, so we take those values that have kind of historically been used. But those are, if you like, those are other fudge factors. Those are parameters that we don't have any, we don't have a rational way of prescribing. I would say the way that we're treating with the effective coefficient of restitution is rational, or at least more rational. Okay, so we have those parameters. So we've got three parameters, this thing I called CM, alpha, and the power. And what else? Okay, so if we use this in the mixture energy balance, this is just saying the working of the particle shear stress through the gradients in the mean velocity are equal to that collisional dissipation. We can obtain a relationship between U prime and T to the 1/2 in terms of quantities that we know something about. Well, we don't know G yet, but if we use this relationship, this is the last relationship we need, and it comes from these equations, now we can begin to make predictions. So if we eliminate the velocity gradients from a relationship between the shear stress and the velocity gradients, we get a relationship between this quantity capital G, which remember was the product of the concentration and the radial distribution function, and the ratio of shear stress to pressure in the flow. And in a steady, fully developed flow, that ratio of shear stress to pressure is the tangent of the angle of inclination. So we know that as soon as we know what the inclination is. So once we know that and choose a value for alpha, this is an equation. Remember, J is a complicated function of the effective coefficients of restitution. This is an equation for the determination of G as a number. So there. And we can also manipulate the equations after using the energy balance and the equation resulting from here. We can also integrate the velocity equation and generate the velocity profile. Once again, parameterized with this ratio of shear stress to pressure and involving a correction due to the fact that we have perhaps particles of two different radii. Okay, so we're setting ourselves up to make some predictions. And as I said, in a steady, fully developed flow down the incline, this ratio of the two stresses is the tangent of angle of inclination. That's information that Tripathi and Kakkar give us. Okay, and finally, once we determine this guy, and we make some assumption about what this singularity is, then we can determine the constant mixture concentration through the depth of the flow. Okay? So now we're going to make all those predictions and see how they compare with the results of numerical simulations. Yeah. Pardon me? It was satisfied in an algebraic way. Here. So here's the energy balance for the mixture. I'm using that I'm using that in order to obtain this relationship, which allows me then to determine what I call capital G and the velocity. So it's being used. No, not in the context of this theory. That is, the temperature that we're interested in is the temperature in the mixture. The mixture, the concentration in the mixture is uniform. I mean, we don't have a boundary value problem. The divergence of the temperature in these simple flows vanishes, so that the energy equation is an algebraic balance. Yeah, so no boundary conditions for these dense flows. Pardon me? Well, no, it's not really an assumption. That's a characteristic of these dense flows, when kind of viewed in the context of the kinetic theory, is the energy equation is satisfied algebraically. That is a contributing factor. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Yeah. I mean. So here, explicitly. Well, I maybe have to go back to the. So you know, there's a strong dependence of the coefficient of restitution here, and that's one of the important ingredients of the energy balance. And here there's also a sensitivity to the coefficient of restitution. So everything is depending on the coefficient of restitution. Yeah, you're likely not to be in this dense dissipative situation then. Then you're in a situation where the classical kinetic theory might apply, and then you have to start solving boundary value problems and imposing boundary conditions at the bumpy bed. Yeah. But as long as you're in this dense, very dense dissipative state, you'll see in the figures that I show you that near the rough bed, this theory is not applying. Something else is happening, and it's just that. There's the slip at the rough bed is likely to be creating some agitation, and that creates a diminished concentration, and we're out of the range of this theory. And also at the top of the flow, the free surface doesn't constrain the particles. The particles are flying around a little bit, and those particles fall outside of the domain of prediction of this theory, okay? But I say that'll be clear, I think. Okay, so. All right, so all these are, this used with this, once we establish what that singularity is a prediction, and U is a prediction, we'll see what happens. Okay. So here is Tripathi and Kakkar looking at a monodispersed system. And a dense flow, monodispersed. So we're not talking about segregation here. They're just running a simulation. So we use this simulation to determine an appropriate value for this singularity. Okay? And so. So if you like, and I may be oversimplifying things, Michele, so forgive me. So we'll take a value of that singularity to give us a good predicted value of the concentration. So the lines of various types are the predictions of the theory. The open symbols are what Tripathi and Kakkar measure. So we take a value of Cm, and it turns out the value of Cm is 0.58. somewhat smaller than we anticipated it would be. And we fix that, okay? So now we fix 0.58, and then we use that relationship between capital G and C and the angle of inclination, so these are various angles of inclination, to predict the other concentrations. Okay, so those are the, and notice, so here's what I meant about the part of the flow that is outside the domain of this theory. Okay, and that's because the boundary is influencing those particles. And similarly, up here at the top. But through the extent of the flow, and this is a flow about 40 particle diameters deep, through the body of the flow, we seem to be doing a pretty good job. Well, you be the judge of whether we're doing a good job or not. But at least we seem to be getting the variation with angle of inclination in the right order. Okay, so that's fine. And these are the velocity profiles through the flow. And here, too, we seem to be doing pretty well. Okay, so that was, and we used alpha equal 0.5, as I said, and we used this power, 1/3. Okay, so now we'd like to predict segregation. Yeah. Let's see. I mean, I don't. You have to tell me whether it's the real Bagnall profile. Power 3/2?
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the plot, it does not go through the origin, yes, or not? The theoretical curves.
What I've left out here is a boundary condition associated with a slip velocity. Okay, I didn't want to get into that, but we permit slip so that the top four or five layers we regard as being a bumpy boundary. And we have boundary conditions that we use at bumpy boundaries that predict the slip. Okay, so you're absolutely right. That is, all right, so now we're going to attempt to predict segregation using that equation that involved x and the gradients of t and gravity. All right, and so we've run out of parameters to adjust now, so we're just left with making predictions. Okay, and once again, so now we're predicting the uniform mixture concentrations through the flow. Okay? Once again, we get them in the right order. I used to say when I started working in granular material, if we could get the predictions and the data on the same page, we were happy. Okay, so, and let's see. And here, we're predicting a concentration fraction of the larger spheres. Is that right, Michele? So here we have a ratio of large sphere radius to small sphere radius of 1.5. So 3:2. And we're assuming the spheres are made of the same material. Well, I mean, that's Tripathi and Kakkar. They use spheres of the same material. Here we're taking that coefficient to be 0.5, as I said we would. And here there's a factor that appears in the theory, which is essentially the total volume fraction of the two species in Tripathi and Kakkar's simulation was 0.5. And they use four angles of inclination. Okay, so again, we seem to be getting things in the right order, but we're certainly missing, and we get limiting cases correctly, but we're missing a kind of diffusion, if you like, or a spread of the data. We're just not capturing it.
What do you mean in terms of getting limiting cases?
Limiting cases at the top. This says all of the large spheres are at the top. And here, you know, there are no large spheres at the bottom. So we get those extremes of segregation at top and bottom. That is, we're agreeing here. We're not agreeing in terms of the nature of the curves, but we are agreeing in terms of the ordering of the degree of segregation, for what it's worth. better with smaller angles. I don't know. Okay, and here we're taking into account the presence of the two different sizes on the velocity profile of the mixture. And once again, you know, we're getting it in the right order. And, well, you mean, I see what you mean. Yeah. I mean, it may be for the smaller angles of inclination, the theory's working better. I mean, you'll see in maybe the next slide I show you that the segregation is really breaking down when we start for the highest angles of inclination. And that may be an indication that the flow is not dense enough to be described by this simple theory I'm using. Okay, so let's go to another example. So this is different sizes, same material. So I guess I want to go to same size, different materials. So here we're dealing, as I said, same size, different materials. Here the masses differ by a factor of 3. Again, we're predicting the concentrations. And this is a worry about this concentration because this prediction for segregation really has nothing to do with the shape of the other curves. I mean, it looks like we're getting the shape of the other curves pretty well, but that prediction is just totally wrong. Okay, and I'm saying it might be that the theory is just not, well, I don't know. And here we're doing the same for the velocities, and again, we get them in the right order. And what next? Different sizes, different materials. So now both differ. The radii differ, and the materials, the material that comprise the spheres differ. And I mean, here we're doing pretty well, for what it's worth. It's a pretty extreme segregation here. Now, this idea that you can play with both the material that comprise the spheres and their size indicates that you might be able to predict situations in which there's no segregation. That is, mixtures of diameter and masses that wouldn't segregate. The rule of thumb is that if all other things are equal, the big spheres go to the cool regions in terms of the kinetic energy T. Or if the radii are the same, the more massive spheres go to the cool regions. Okay? So there's a possibility of playing with the size and the material with which you make the spheres in order that you have no segregation. And that's seen in the context of our segregation equation. That is, once we substitute in for the temperature gradient and factor out the gravitational acceleration, we have a coefficient here that is a function of only concentration and coefficient of restitution, and the difference in masses and difference in radii. So if we set that equal to 0, then we get a condition on the difference in masses ratio with the difference in radii as a function of coefficient of restitution and concentration. So here are curves along which the prediction is there will be no segregation over a range of mixture concentrations, 0.5 to 0.8. Here is the most dissipative, and here is the least dissipative. Okay, and as yet we don't have any data for that, but I'll ask Luke to do some simulations to see to what extent there is any merit in making predictions like this. Okay, I mean, If I have a coefficient of restitution of 0.65, then at a concentration of 5.5, a particular ratio of mass difference and radii difference will not segregate. That's the idea. Okay, I think I'm finished. All right, so the conclusion is we took two kind of rough theories, a theory for segregation and a theory for dense dissipative mixtures. We put them together, and we tested the predictions against the results of an existing numerical simulation. And the results weren't terrible. And the possibility now of having both the theory and the results gives us the possibility of now turning some dials, making some adjustments in the concentration dependence or the dependence on the coefficient of restitution to improve the predictive powers of such a theory. Thank you. Yes.
Is that something that threshold value can that be predicted by your theory?
Let's see. I think so. I think, let's see. That's certainly. So the question is whether. Michele, can you help me with this? Are we limited? What happens if we... No, we're not. I don't think we're predicting depth. That is... I just don't know if that's contained in the theory. You know, if the failure of the theory is contained in the theory in that way. It should, the answer to that question should also, I mean, that should be true of a single constituent. I mean, so that's why I was going to look at the single constituent results. Let me think about it. See, we're not predicting depth of flow, Kelly. I don't know. I'll have to think about that and answer it at another time.
So we have more questions? Well, you gave this rule of thumb heuristic about the big ones go to be cooler and all of them being equal. What's the physics of that?
Well, it's you got gravity, which is if you like, it's people like to make analogies with buoyancy and gravity. I mean, the physics of it is a momentum exchange, a collisional momentum exchange with the neighboring particles. And whether you go up or whether you go down depends upon the detailed balance of the collisional momentum that a typical particle of species A or species B. Yeah. I mean, the people who would like to make it simple would make an analogy with buoyancy. It's just that I don't think buoyancy is particularly appropriate in the context of a kinetic theory. That's a continuum idea. Yeah. No. It depends, though. Whose experiments are you referring to? Yeah, I don't trust those simulations because I think that there's a phase change that's taking place in the middle. I think that's expelling particles. Okay. So that. Yeah. I mean, that's a kind of a. I don't want to say pathological, but that's a peculiar flow because. There are a lot of bad things happening near the center line. The temperature is going to zero. The concentration is getting very high.
But it's the same flow as this one turned on. I mean, it's just
But there's no center line here.
But there's a zero stress boundary condition.
Yeah, but the velocity, well.
The gradient goes to zero if the surface of the inclined plane flows too.
But the theory's not dealing with that upper level. You know, that's the near the free boundary. No, we're dealing in the core of the flow. And like I should say, that's a stress-free boundary, but if the temperature there is not zero. Okay, so that's still an agitated region of the flow, while the zero shear center line of the chute is a place where the temperature gets very small. Yeah, that's right. No, you're right.
Why is the diffusion? You still have mass diffusion problem.
Yeah, there's still diffusion. That is, there are three terms in that segregation equation. The left-hand side is the diffusive term, and then the right-hand, or there are two terms on the right-hand side, and one is gravity, and the other is what you might call thermal diffusion, what's called thermal diffusion in the kinetic theory literature. Yeah, that's right. I mean, there's the coefficient is not correct to give you the more diffusive behavior that you see in the numerical simulations. Yeah?
My second question is that in another world, Kripati and Kaka
yes.
have studied the motion of a single ball.
Yes.
And the interaction with the other particles seems to be well described by the drag coefficient.
Yeah.
The drag based on the local viscosity of the
field. Yeah.
So my question is, can you comment this? I was expecting that your interaction term in your segregation equation to be a drag based on the local viscosity given by the kinetic theory, for example. And you can choose completely different.
Yeah. Well, so they have the two species moving with respect to one another. I don't have this. I'm just looking at the steady, fully developed situation. So I can't talk about drag. If we talk about a time-dependent developing flow, or an unsteady situation, start from some initial conditions where we're not steady, then we have an additional force that is proportional to the velocity difference. I mean, that kind of a term is present in the kinetic theory. A difference between the velocities of the two species here that. Those velocities are zero. It's an additional interaction. It's an additional interaction in an unsteady situation. No, the length scale is just serving to establish the properties of the mixture. Okay, so those are, I mean, certainly one of the properties of the mixture is the temperature profile. So, but the nature of the Well, that might be, yeah. I mean, that may be a way, that, yeah, that's, a, you're saying, hey, we can change the segregation theory in a way that's analogous to your changing the mixture theory, the flow theory, and fix it up. And you may be exactly right, okay? I mean, we were kind of focused on getting the predictions now of this amalgamated theory, and then we really haven't thought beyond that. But I think that your point is a good one. Okay.
It looks like the velocities in the top layer are most overpredicted compared to the lower layer. And I was wondering, on the other hand, your prediction of the particle size profile is giving too many particles. particles on top. And big particles will tend to give a stronger shear stress. So you would expect that, and it would rather be slower than
stronger shear stress for the same velocity gradient. What we're not taking into account, perhaps, is the role of the temperature. That viscosity, if you like, also depends upon the temperature. So the answer may be in the temperature profile. But this is something that we should talk about maybe outside and see if we can resolve it. So your point is there are opposing effects that have to be reconciled near the top of the flow. Under prediction of the motion of the large particles, and over prediction of the velocity at the top.
I was surprised that if you have too many big particles on top, I would expect your velocity profile to be more uniform than observed in the numerical simulations, and it's the other way around.
Okay, well let's try. I don't think I can solve that right now. Well, so the size ratios that we looked at, let's say in the first transparency, were 3 to 2. We're comfortable with 3 to 2, as long as they're made of the same material. But not, yeah. No, I understand. Yeah. Well, we're pushing the theory beyond its derivation. For the mixture, yeah. Yeah. Oh, I mean, there are ways to make this more complicated. Okay. The issue, as far as we're concerned, is how far can you take the simplifications? It's possible to make it to extend it to deal with bigger mass ratios by incorporating more of the original kinetic theory upon which it was based. Okay? But that's just a complicated and messy job.
Could it be solved by actually treating the species entirely separate and not introducing it as a mixture, not trying to solve for a single one?
And do you mean retaining temperatures for each species? I mean, I'm sure if you did that, you could improve the situation. But again, I say it's complication. You're building in complications that may be formidable. Okay. In my view, there's a great appeal in dealing with a effective single constituent with segregation kind of superposed upon it. It's more or less the analog of the way we deal with fixed law or something like that. We don't deal with two separate constituents in that context. But I think you could improve upon it.
All right, good. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.